And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is author David Fauché. He's here to talk about a book that he's just published called Across Two Novembers, A Year in the Life of a Blind Bibliophile. It's a lovely book, and everyone's been exclaiming over this image of a book tree that's on the cover. And David, you've been in our studios before, just recently, I think in the springtime, to talk about a wonderful Dinners in the Dark that your organization, I guess the Acadian Association for the Blind, put on as a fundraiser, and you were here talking about that event. But you were excited at that time about your book that was about to come out, and you sent me a copy of it, and it's really, really lovely. So I think we're going to start off, before we get into the book itself, to let people know about your background and why being a bibliophile has been so important a part of your life. So what is your background, your education, and what, how did books become so important to you?
Thank you, Judith. I would have to say that books have always been important to me because they see for me, they take me places and show me things I would otherwise miss. My background, not surprisingly, is that I have an English degree, a Bachelor of Arts in English from LSU, and later followed that up with a Master of Library and Information Science. And so I guess it's no surprise that I would eventually write a book about books.
Since you had studied about reading, and not just reading, but how we file books and how we care for our books. And that's a pretty complex subject, library science. Now, where did your love of stories and books begin, though? Because I think it started before your college career.
Definitely. It started when I was a preteen. My mother had always read to us when we were children. I remember Dr. Seuss and That Crazy Cat in the Hat, or Sam I Am, who just wouldn't eat green eggs and ham. But as I became a preteen, I discovered the magic of historic fiction for young adults and young readers, and I discovered the Newbery books, and I worked with the library in Baton Rouge. They would always send me books. At that time, many of them were on slow-playing phonograph records, and then they later migrated to four-track cassette. So, yes, my interest and love of books goes back a long time.
Now, I did mention a couple times that you are blind, and but that was a gradual process, I think. So how did your relationship to story and reading change over the years?
As my vision deteriorated, I was born with vision trouble and was treated for it. But when I was about 11, I developed secondary glaucoma, which is not a usual thing. I developed it secondary to cataracts, which I'm told is very unusual because most people develop glaucoma in their 40s or 50s. And believe me, I would have been happy to wait. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so as my vision deteriorated, I became more and more aware, I believe, of the recorded word of the of books on record and even cassette. I did learn Braille from an early age because while I did have usable vision, it was never quite usable enough to handle even large print. So I enjoyed reading books in Braille. I can remember books by Isabel Holland, Madeleine L'Engle, even reading The Catcher in the Rye for a ninth grade book report, The Old Man and the Sea. It was another book. So I've always been familiar with Braille books, mm-hmm. and everything seems now to be audio.
Yeah, and you say some very interesting things in your book about the development of Braille and the attitude of younger people now to Braille. And it's really interesting, some things that I would not have thought about that population is quite aware of. So but your love for story, your love for books continued and grew, obviously, if you got a degree in English and a degree in library science. And you sound like you were quite a voracious devourer of stories throughout your life.
I have definitely enjoyed reading. I have a master book list that goes back to 1986, and I've noticed on average I've read anywhere from 150 to about 275 books a year, which is unsurely too many. I definitely need to do something else.
Oh my, yes, that's you're putting the rest of us to shame.
But I don't take in much television. Mm. I do spend time on the internet now. It does cut into some of my reading time because I do email and do check out things on the web at times, but I don't take in a lot of television. There are a few series I've liked called The Midwife, and this new Queen Victoria series is rather interesting, but I don't do very much with television.
Mm-hmm. Well, how did it come to you to write your own book? You've read hundreds and hundreds of books over your lifetime. What inspired you to actually write your own?
And I do describe it in my introduction, a friend asked me to review her book, and I thought, I could write like this. Mm. I could do this.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have your introduction in front of you, actually written in Braille, and I would love for you to read the introduction. It's not very long, but I think it might give people a sense of again, how you were inspired and what you hope to do in this book.
I'll begin with the quote that opens the introduction. Every chapter has a book-related quote. This one is from Helen Keller. I couldn't leave her out. She's such a pivotal figure in blind literacy and as such an advocate of her time. It begins, "More than at any other time, when I hold a beloved book in my hand, my limitations fall from me. My spirit is free." And it's Helen Keller, 1880 to 1968. "I have long wanted to write and publish something, be it an historic novel, a young adult novel, or nonfiction. When in November 2013, Dr. Catherine Schneider asked me to read and review her just published, Occupying Aging, I conquered my usual reservations. Would I be a good reviewer? Would I be able to write something interesting and help her book sales? I dove in and came up with this review, which appeared on www.goodreads.com. This book, with its mixture of the quotidian and sublime, stands as an interesting glimpse into the life of one early 21st century woman. Schneider, a retired psychologist, recounts a year of thoughts and events in this journal. Her ruminations on death, spirituality, dogs, and navigating the landscape of the sighted as a totally blind inhabitant of her Wisconsin college town are enlightening. Touches of humor involving her guide dog, Fran, add a sense of fun. As someone who is acquainted with Dr. Schneider, we have emailed in the past, I could wish I occupied my 40s quite as well as she does her 60s. The proactive attempts to educate about disability issues, the volunteering, and the public speaking are outstanding. Maybe some of her enthusiasm for life will rub off on all her readers. An excellent Vade Mecum, a handbook for handling the uncertainties of retirement. While reading her book and formulating my review, I thought, oh, I might be able to write something in this journal-type format. So I jumped in right then, not waiting to begin on the more traditional January 1st. I thought that to wait was to postpone indefinitely and fail. To start could mean a chance at a successful resolution. Who says a journal has to run from January 1st to December 31st to be of interest? So everyone, here goes nothing.
And you started that nothing, as you call it, on November 16th, 2013, and continued it for exactly a year. And I'm glad that you mentioned in your book that where you had gotten the inspiration for that title, because it's kind of what I thought with Across Two Novembers. Tell us where you were inspired for that title.
I thought of several titles, actually. One was Gumbo, a biblionautic adventure. Another was Kaleidoscope, a year in the life of a blind book lover. And I was thinking of the two Novembers, and I had come across the book Across Five Aprils and thought I might tweak that title just a bit. you can't actually copyright a title. I mean, I wasn't going to take that title, but you can't actually copyright a title. I almost went with Kaleidoscope, but my editor thought because Danielle Steele had a book by that name, it might not be a good idea. Of course, maybe I would have gotten mixed up with her and gotten all of her fans. That would have been lovely.
Well, but also I think people have a lot of fond memories of Across Five Aprils, that war about the book about the Civil War, and a lot of really good memories, people reading that in high school. So I think this is a good reference, and it gives a sense of the time frame. And as you said, you didn't wait. You jumped right in and started in the middle of November and continued for exactly a year. Now, in addition to loving books, people may have noticed, as you mentioned in your introduction there, you review books. You reviewed your friend's books, but you regularly review books, I believe, for the Library Association Journal?
It's actually Library Journal. What happened was in 2005, a contact of mine, David Rothman, who is himself an author, one of his books that comes to mind was called Networld. He hooked me up there. He is a journalist. He appeared on the Jim Bohannon Show in 1996. I happened to email him, and we corresponded on and off for many years. We still do. And so he talked to them, and they agreed I could review audiobooks, since trying to review a print one might be a touch tricky. So they invited me to do that. In fact, I just reviewed one, A Column of Fire, which is Ken Follett's new book, read by actor John Lee. I try to focus some on what the narration is like. Is the person good with accents? Do they have an elegant sort of cut-glass diction, which is what Rosalind Landor brings to any book she reads? Are they like Davina Porter, who reminds me a bit of somebody's tiny cottage full of lavender and potpourri and silver dishes? And, you know, each one brings something unique to the book. Some people can do really good accents. Some people have an interesting way of pacing. And I always try to focus on something audio about the book, since the print book has already been reviewed.
Well, that's an interesting aspect of it that I think and that's very popular. Audiobooks are very popular these days, and that's as much an interesting part of the book as the story, the way it's presented, the way it's read. So you do those regularly, and you do talk about those reviews in your book. Tell us about what you thought would be important to include in this book. Even though you just jumped right in, you must have been gathering your thoughts about what you wanted to make sure you included and what we felt and understood about your life in this book.
I wanted you to get a sense of what the day-to-day life was for a blind person who isn't well-known. I mean, I've not climbed mountains or tandem biked across the country. Tandem biking actually would be interesting, and I haven't sailed. There are organizations that blind people are in that sail. So I wanted sighted people to get a sense of what it might be like for a blind person in the early 21st century. So I try to give you bits of my days. Some days were very short. There was one day in particular I wanted to write, you know, list the date, the heading, and then write, just put an ellipsis. But my editor thought people would have trouble trying to read that. How do you read ellipsis? Do you just go like, today would be Wednesday, September 13th, 2017, ellipsis?
Well, some days are like that, aren't they?
Tell me. But there were some days I might have just put, woke up, shopped, cooked, and that was all for that day. So when there were days like that, I tried to supplement with some did you know features, some interesting trivia, trivia with a depth, and some all kinds of book bits.
Well, I think you flesh your days out very well. Also, you add those wonderful trivia bits, but you make sure that we understand the texture of your days, too. And you're very attuned to smells. You started talking about smells a little bit earlier. You're very attuned to tastes. It's a very sensual book in many ways. And not only is there the reading aspect and talking about all of the books that you read, but other elements of your life that give us us a sense of perhaps being more mindful about our own lives.
Well, I do include bits from the audio blog I kept, again at the behest of David Rothman, from May of 2004 till March of 2009. I didn't want that to be lost, and so some of that makes it. My backlist of books occasionally appears in there as well. Mm-hmm. I wanted those to be remembered as well, so they got in there. You mentioned briefly concerning an article about Ed Kazayu. I believe he was featured in 2014 at an event in October. I liked the article about the green architecture. So you're in there. KRVS gets mentioned in the webliography.
And I noticed that KRVS gets mentioned and public radio gets mentioned often in your entries. We were quite pleased here to realize that you were touched by public radio so often. Well, let me ask you about your own feelings about memoirs and books like this, because you do mention quite a number of them. What do you get out of them personally?
A memoir to me is a glimpse into the life of its author. It's not quite autobiography because some of them don't cover quite as much, but they give you a sense of what the author is thinking and feeling. They're related to autobiography and biography, and those two forms are also interesting. I didn't and probably won't ever write an autobiography. I don't really want to. I wanted to give you a look into my life, but I wasn't having an open house. I wanted everything in the book to be true, but I may not have told you everything.
That is a great image and metaphor right there, David. An open house, but you didn't want to show everything.
Right. You got a peek into the window, mm-hmm. but I wasn't holding open house.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I'm not as comfortable with the trend, and some writers have done it, to let everything come out in a memoir. Mm-hmm. I'm not that brave.
Mm-hmm. Well, but as I said, you add a lot of sensual details. And in addition to talking about your book reviews, one of the things you do very well is review local food.
Oh, I loved food. I really wanted that MFA in gastronomy if I'd had the energy.
MFA in gastronomy,
Boston,
that would be great.
Oh, it mm-hmm. would. One very kind Amazon reviewer compared this journal to Samuel Pepys. Now, I don't pretend to be in that league, but I didn't argue with him. I was so grateful for the review. Mm-hmm. I've looked at over 1,100 Amazon reviewer profiles, have sent out close to 250 query emails, mm-hmm. and maybe have five. It's like panning for gold. You pan and pan and pan, and maybe you catch it. Sometimes it's been an adventure trying to promote this. I also do a virtual book blog tour for the next couple of weeks. And like I said, it's been an adventure. I've done a few interviews. I'm trying to land Jim Engster in Baton Rouge. It's been a little hard. Jim Brown did have me on his show. He telephoned me, and I did make it there. And I did an interview on indieview.com as a sort of email type interview.
Mm-hmm. Well, again, I think they're feeling touched and moved by the book in the same way I was. But I do want to get back to reviewing the way you review food. And what's important to you in telling us about your experiences with restaurants and food? What did you want to make sure you conveyed?
I wanted people to realize the range and diversity of restaurants in Lafayette. It really surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
We've had several that are more like health food type places. There mm-hmm. are Thai places. We have a couple of Indian places. Mm-hmm. We don't have Ethiopian yet.
Mm-hmm.
I'll live. Or macrobiotic, I'll manage.
Mm-hmm.
But in addition to the standard sort of excellent Cajun places we have a variety of things.
Mm-hmm. But it's also your personal response to the food, because that makes a difference in food writing, how you write about it, how you describe things.
I love like the smell and the taste mm-hmm. or the presentation. If it's arranged, I can't always see how it's arranged on a plate, but you know, I can sort of be aware of it when I'm tapping around my plate with a fork.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
Or just the little things, how they might have garnished it or how it might have been presented recently at a restaurant I ordered there. It was some kind of boar sausage with fried quail egg, and each little sliver of sausage had a quail egg on top, fried, held with a toothpick. It was really good. I was a little leery, like, would I like a quail egg? But it actually was good.
I think people are understanding why I was fascinated with your descriptions. You're quite passionate about food writing. Do you read books, food writers?
I have. I'm backed up right now because I need to read some stuff. I have a book that came out recently about the history of butter. Those sort of history of books are interesting. Mm-hmm. Mark Kurlansky did one tying the history of New York with the history of oysters. I haven't read it, but I need to.
And I think he has one called Cod and one called Salt.
Yeah. Those are also good. Mm-hmm. He's interesting.
Well, you know, you make me think of those T-shirts that read so many books, so little time.
Definitely. Tell me about it. And I listen as fast as I can with audio. Yeah. I have a link. If you visit www.dldbooks.com/David Fauche, that's DavidFauchex/, you will see a link to a report that I think she was with KATC, Brianna Malloy, had done. She did a report and it aired in February, and I show you how I speed listen, and I'm going as fast as I can because I know that I feel like an air traffic controller. There are lots of books circling overhead wanting to land.
Oh my, speed listening. In addition to learning speed reading, I do want to tell people who are listening or perhaps just tuning in, my guest is author David Fauche, who's just published a book entitled Across Two Novembers, A Year in the Life of a Blind Bibliophile. And it's exactly a year over two Novembers, November 16th, 2013 to November 16th, 2014. And just a fascinating journey. As you said, you really wanted people to have a clear sense of what it is like to be an ordinary person who is blind in the 21st century, not scaling mountains or, you know, going over the seas in a sailboat, but just living a life, reading books, enjoying his surroundings, enjoying the food, enjoying his family. You do talk a lot about family, and it sounds as though your family has been incredibly important to you and very supportive of you as well.
Family have been important and very supportive. I have always, you know, wanted to try to stay connected. I've always felt like I would like to try living somewhere else for a year, but I've had some health issues and have been rather hesitant to do it. But I'm grateful that with things like email, it's so easy to stay connected now than it ever used to be.
And you describe many of those relationships you have with people who live in different parts of the world that you've stayed in touch with through email.
Right. I visited a friend in England in 2015, someone I had met 19 years before on email. And then I have friends in Baton Rouge and several other places that I tend to stay connected, either email and or telephone.
That's really been fascinating to just see how you do stay connected with everyone. So what are some of your favorite genres of literature?
I think my favorite genre of all has been historic fiction, be it young adult or adult historic fiction. I believe I first became aware of it when I was young, and I was reading books such as one called Roman's Grove, which was a sort of time travel fantasy. I do like time travel fantasy. Dinah Gabaldon's famous series is a favorite of mine, though I could wish she would wrap it up. There have been 8 books, each the size of a telephone book, and I'm hoping Dr. Gabaldon, she is a PhD, I think it's quantitative ecology, something like that, very clever. And I hope she will wrap it up so that I can say I finished it. I also like historic mystery. I don't read that as much because mysteries usually confound me. I don't seem to solve them the way some people do. I also enjoy nonfiction, the kind that takes you into a place you would otherwise not have seen. Recently, I read a book all about the collecting of old 78 records. I forget the title, and I have one to read called Hammerhead. I believe the author is Nina McLaughlin, and she tells you about how she became a carpenter.
You know how there are people who have a service of helping other people to buy clothes? I think you could be an incredible assistant for helping people finding books. Oh, my.
I'm ready. Somebody hire me.
Get in contact with you.
A book curator.
A book curator. Absolutely. That would be a marvelous job. And you write about so many other things, your neighbors. You write about going to church with your neighbors and just lovely everyday details of your life.
I was very grateful to my across-the-hall neighbor. She has a connection to the Mardi Gras song Giacomo. Her late ex-husband wrote it, and she graciously got 2 copies of my book to Sally Ann Roberts and her sister Robin Roberts. They appear in my August chapter. Robin wrote Everybody's Got Something, and I happened to review it briefly in my August chapter, not realizing my neighbor had a connection. So the books went out there. I'm hoping I hear from them at some point. If I'm keeping my fingers crossed and hoping.
I want to read just one simple paragraph, and you didn't bring this in Braille, so I'm going to read it. It's not very long. It's in your epilogue, and I think it really encapsulates what you're hoping to do with this book. And it says, "If I have made you curious enough to explore something mentioned in the journal, a bit of trivia, a book, an author, Louisiana, a recipe, I will have succeeded. If even one quote inspired you, one book intrigued you, one trivia bit wowed you, or one entry encouraged you, I have not failed. I have attempted to give my readers a glimpse of life lived at the intersection of blindness and fibromyalgia. I have attempted to use books as a skeleton on which to flesh out my story, not just one book, not just 10 books, but herds of them." That's really lovely. How can people find out more about your book? You've mentioned a few websites, but what's the best place to find out more about Across Two Novembers, A Year in the Life of the
Blind? I would suggest two places. One is the www.dldbooks.com/David Fauché/, because it will have things that are happening with me, new reviews, new events. You can also find me on Amazon. I'm there. Mm-hmm. It's on Amazon.
Okay. And if people – I guess if they just type in A Year in the Life of a Blind Bibliophile, that'll probably bring them to some place where they can know more
it
about
should.
Your book. Yes.
Blind people might check out bookshare.org, which is a website that has electronic versions of books that – blind people can use. And I'm told the New Orleans Radio Reading Service, www.wrbh.org, is going to read the book on air in about a month and broadcast it in the New Orleans area. And you can access that through their website, which I just gave.
How wonderful. Well, so many ways to experience this book. Again, if you've just tuned in, my guest is author David Fauché. His book, his recently published book, is called Across Two Novembers, A Year in the Life of a Blind Bibliophile. Thank you so much, David, for persisting and writing it and publishing it and sharing your life and your experiences with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.
And for the audience for listening.
Support for KRVS comes from Cox Communications, offering Connect to Compete, C2C, a discounted internet service for K-12 students on free or reduced lunch. Cox supports closing the gap in the digital divide through C2C and a local technology partnership with Boys and Girls Club of Acadiana. For information, the website is cox.com/C2C.
Support for KRVS comes from the College of the Arts at UL Lafayette, where students and faculty are working towards a more meaningful and creative future, offering professional degrees in visual arts, music, performing arts, architecture, and design. For information, the phone number is 337-482-6224 or online at arts.louisiana.edu.
You are listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.